Welcome to Optimal Insights. I'm your host, Jim Glennon, Senior Vice President of Hedging and Trading Operations at Optimal Blue. Our clients and industry partners have long relied on Optimal Blue for trusted insights and commentary, and these podcasts are an evolution of our commitment to keeping the industry informed. Let's dive into today's episode.
Welcome to Optimal Insights, your weekly source for real-time rate data and expert capital markets commentary, brought to you by Optimal Blue. Let's dive in and help you maximize your profitability this week.
All right. Welcome, everybody. Thanks for being here today. Welcome to summer. I believe we had our first day of summer this week, so glad to have you here, even if you're on vacation or whatever. The world is still moving, that's for sure. We have a lot to talk about today. So we're here making sure that you know what to watch out for as an originator, a capital markets person, or just someone interested in the mortgage industry and great market commentary. We've got Alex and James here today. We're going to give you a full market update as well as a recap of the FOMC meeting, the first for Kevin Warsh that took place last week. And then we also have a little bit of sad news out of the Fed. You've probably heard that Alan Greenspan passed away at the ripe old age of 100 on Monday. So we'll talk a little bit about him and maybe a little bit of his career and life during those 100 years and one of the longest running chairmen of the Fed. Before we get into market update, just I'm sure you're all aware, but interest rates hanging in there where they've been since the war started, pretty much with Iran. Not a lot of relief there, with a little bit of relief in the actual conflict. 6.5% on the OBMMI, that's the 30-year conventional rate, has been hanging between 6.4 and 6.6 since about March. And then, the 10-year, stubbornly high as well at 4.5. And that spread still hanging in at 2%, which is good. It's better than it was, 2 years ago, we were at 3%, right? So we're in a much better spot there, but it likely takes the 10-year dropping to see a big change in the OBMMI. So hopefully we'll get that as we get into the second half of the year. Although, we'll talk about this first Fed meeting. It did not give a lot of hope that we're going to see lower rates in the near future or even in the distant future. So let's start with that, gentlemen. Welcome, by the way. Good to see your faces again. I was off last week. And a lot happened. So Kevin Warsh's first Fed meeting as chairman, and it was anticipated there'd be some differences in the way he looks at the world and the world economy and interest rates and the opacity maybe of the Fed and what drives their decisions and how much of the why you share with the public. But what did you all glean from that speech? I think, James, you were saying you listened to it several times already, maybe 6 or 7 or 8 times. But how do we think about the next 6 to 18 months? And just what did you glean from that speech after the Fed announcement that we obviously didn't have a cut or a rate hike last week, which was expected?
Yeah, well, it's definitely going to be a different regime with Warsh at the helm. I would say first and foremost is he likes to keep his communication pretty curt, pretty concise. He doesn't like to beat around the bush. He said this himself, is that he does not like the idea of the markets reacting to what the Fed might think. He wants markets reacting to what they think about data. So he likes to keep it very, very slim. He carved down the Fed release from something like 300 words to 150, cut it right in half. And he let us know that he's going to be taking the helm to try and rethink a little bit of the data, a little bit of how the Fed is viewing things and how they are going to be communicating moving forward. I know, Alex, you had pointed a few things that you wanted to on the task force.
Task force was a heavily dropped term during this meeting. He spent the first, probably third of this meeting talking about his 5 or 6 new task force that are going to modernize the Fed in his eyes. He thinks that right now the data they're looking at isn't the most up to date for the U.S. economy, and making sure that they're not looking too in the rearview mirror, which has been a critique of the Fed by some parties. So, yeah, there's about 5 or 6 task forces that he is rolling out. He didn't really give any details beyond the title of them and their their task. But he did say more details would be coming in the fall on them as they begin to come to life or fleshed out.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're all for change. We're all for modernization. It makes a lot of sense. We've been staring at the same numbers seemingly forever, ever since a bit of a change in the ideology of the philosophy of the Fed, if you will. I think it was during Bernanke's rule where they became a little bit more transparent about what numbers they look at and what sort of barriers they were trying to manage between. But before that, it was a little bit more opaque, like what Warsh is thinking. When under Greenspan, it was more of the Fed speak, if you will, right? Just sort of being a little bit cagey or even just a little bit indirect about how the Fed would speak about how they made their decisions. So you couldn't try to anticipate them or couldn't try to make moves based on what you think the Fed is thinking, right? So I kind of get that going back to something where investors should be making investment decisions on what they see, not what they think the Fed sees and how they're going to interpret it. So yeah, interesting days to come, and the market didn't like it, and maybe that's fine for now. There's going to be a shakeup anytime there's a major change in a regime. They used to say that, you know, the Fed was more powerful than the White House in a lot of ways, especially as it relates to the financial markets. So we probably got off easy maybe with the movement that we saw after the press conference last week. So I guess we'll see how it goes. Any other, like, what else did you all pull from that the meeting on Wednesday? Anything else kind of consequential or even just interesting or funny?
I think the number one thing you should be taking away is we kind of entered during this Iran conflict, coin flip Fed, if you will, is are they still focusing on inflation? Are they focusing on the jobs numbers? And I think that Warsh put, you know, the final nail in the coffin on the dovish theory. And I would say that there's one takeaway from this meeting, it was that we've pivoted to a fully hawkish Fed. He only talked about inflation in regards to the mandates. And he said that inflation is a choice. It's a choice that we've repeatedly made, essentially saying that it's something that they will be looking to crack down on, which, again, that's one of the number one concerns. If you look at the polling in regards to U.S. politics, is the economy, and, you know, your dollar does not go as far as it used to. And if you know Warsh's history, he's always leaned more hawkish. I think there were some voices still wondering in regards to the, you know, the White House and Fed independence. Is Warsh going to be in Trump's pocket? I think another takeaway is Warsh definitely does not seem to be in Trump's pocket in regards to the, you know, Trump wants rate cuts. I don't think Warsh is going to give them to him easily.
Yeah, that was a huge concern. It's amazing the 180 that's been pulled there between the Fed being basically essentially attacked by the White House, rhetoric about a 2-point cut in rates needs to happen or we're in deep trouble, nominating Kevin Warsh, who's a longtime like family friend of the Trumps, and there was a lot of fear there that the sort of wall between the executive branch and the Fed was crumbling with that nomination. But now it's gone the other way. Now people are worried he's going to be more hawkish than Powell or the rest of the crew moving forward. So, I mean, I think it's a very good thing. I think it says a lot about stabilization of prices. As you said, people are a main concern right now is inflation. People, I think, understand inflation at this point because we've been fed it for the last 2 years or more. And it's really impacted people in a negative way, especially people who don't have a lot of savings or investments. So yeah, it seems like the right thing to be focused on, especially since we've had a relatively healthy jobs market seemingly forever, knock on wood, give or take a couple of cracks last year.
I think the number one takeaway is from the market was that, you know, we're going to see likely rate hikes this year. It's kind of been a coin flip when those rate hikes were going to happen, if it was going to be the end of this year, if it was going to be in early 2027. But after Warsh's speech, we saw the market move those expectations in several months. We're now expecting a hike in September, if you look at the CME group numbers, in addition to another one in October. Bloomberg is less, a chance for one hike this year. But across the board, we saw the market price in a more hawkish Fed and rate hikes before year end.
Yeah, just another huge swing, you know, two hikes by the end of the year. Obviously, a lot of things can happen between now and then. in terms of the economy and the war and inflation and jobs, but it does feel more like we're going to see higher rates before we see them lower. But it probably doesn't have a big effect on long-term rates. We've talked a lot about that on this podcast. That's priced in at this point. Other things can have an effect on long-term rates and probably will over the rest of this year, but I wouldn't expect a direct correlation between those two hikes and, say, an OBMMI of 7% necessarily, and, you know, a 10-year at 5. Feels more like we will sit at the 6.5 level for probably at least the rest of the year, while the short end gets hiked up by those hikes if they happen later in the year. How about you, James? Anything additional you gleaned from the meeting that you think is good for people to take away?
I would circle a little bit back to the communication. You know, Warsh said, hey, the way I look at the interest rates, like, I'm looking at the handle. So I don't look to the right of the decimal point very often. So right now, if CPI is at 2.8, he's rounding down to 2. And then he is not one to put a dot on the dot plot. So he does not want to offer up exactly what he sees, where he sees rates in the future. He wants to be a little bit more coy with it, which that is, as you alluded to earlier, there's a little bit of an old school, new school theory here. Around 2008, we started being a little bit more vocal about what the Fed was thinking, why they were thinking it, what the trajectory was. It was to try and get the market to understand the direction. But if you go back before that, it was much more Fed speak, much more tough to see through. And I guess the idea is that the market should be almost acting laissez-faire on its own. It shouldn't be relying on the Fed as he pushes back towards that. But I do think, you know, with not putting a dot on the dot plot, he may, like Mirren, have a very different idea of where rates could be. He's not necessarily communicating that to us. Saying a 2.8 inflation rate is actually a 2% inflation rate, I would call that pretty dovish. And, you know, as I know Alex loves this point too, but those two rate hikes that are priced in this year, they remain to be seen, right? If I raise rates, that doesn't make more oil appear. And if I cut them, it doesn't make more oil appear. So the Fed is going to act on what happens with the war and then what happens secondarily, the impact of the economy. It's not necessarily going to make the immediate choice to hike or cut based on, is our, you know, core inflation getting a little high?
And that's a good point. And that situation seems to be figuring itself out already. If we look at gas prices anyway, as any sort of measurement, right? I think we got back the other day and gas was closer to $3 a gallon than it was to $4 a gallon here in Denver. So that was a welcome development that I think is going to cool people's jets a little bit in terms of worries about inflation and what, you know, the monthly bills look like.
National average is around $3.94, something like that. So we're back below four average.
Super healthy relative to the first half of the year.
Yeah, we'll have to see where the conflict goes from here. Right now they're doing, Iran and U.S. representatives have met in Switzerland. You know, Vance, who's part of the U.S. contingent there, has said that they had really good negotiations on the first day and made progress. So it remains to be seen for a final peace deal and getting that strait open and what state that strait will be in, you know, the mines, the physical barriers to that strait, in addition to if there's going to be any sorts of tolls levied there. That's been thrown around quite a bit over the last 4 or 5 months now on what the state of the strait will look like as we come out of this. But I'm with James, and I mean, James was making the point for me, but this inflationary shock we've seen, to me, largely reads as, you know, a supply side shock, which there's very little the Fed can do. So I think the market right now has gotten a little bit out ahead of itself in regards to rate hikes. We seem to be comfortable in the high twos, low threes in regards to our inflation rate over the past several years. But at the same time, Warsh has said inflation's a choice, and he is, you know, narrowing in on that core inflation outside of those energy costs. So remains to be seen if we're going to get those hikes. I would tend to be on the lesser side, though, for hikes this year.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. I think we'll obviously see, but it does feel like, yeah, hopefully, you know, JD can negotiate the deal and follow through. It's good to see Vice President Vance getting a little airtime, by the way. I feel like with the big personalities in the White House these days, with you know, President Trump and Lutnick and Bessent. You don't see a lot of the VP, but he's down there hopefully getting it done. If it gets done quickly enough and with enough, say, you know, advantages for the U.S., which is a big part of why we went over there in the first place, I think we could see that flow through to equities, and then you could see that hopefully flow through to prices and then rates, maybe a little bit of relief there in the short term. Meanwhile, economic data still continues to flow. So what should we be watching this week other than things like the war, gas prices? I believe we have PCE this week, right? Which typically the Fed's preferred measurement. We don't know exactly where Warsh is looking, but what do we expect there?
Correct. We're getting PCE this week. It'll be a little bit later in the week, Thursday, I believe, and expected to remain a bit high, about 3.8%, I believe, is the consensus. I'm personally expecting a little bit more volatility in the market reaction to this. This is the, again, as you said, Jim, PCE is the Fed's preferred inflation metric, but I think they're probably reworking their models right now in regards to just taking Warsh at his word when he said, I prefer when financial markets react to the data themselves and not second order effects of what they think I'm thinking about it. So I expect there might be a little bit more volatility on this release, even if it comes in right at consensus. So for, you know, secondary capital markets folks, maybe keep an eye on, you know, volatility and your TBA levels coming in Thursday morning. But that's definitely going to be the biggest release this week is going to be those inflation numbers.
Good one to watch. And then we've got consumer sentiment on Friday. That's always, I feel like that number still gets probably not enough recognition. I think what the consumer thinks has a lot to do with what they spend, although somehow retail sales have just never faltered in this 4 years of inflation that we've seen. But there's still something to be said about how the consumer feels about how we're doing on inflation, which is probably not going to be good. And how well the general consumer thinks they're doing in terms of their savings and what they're likely to spend second half of the year, holiday season, all that. I don't know. Anything we should be taking away from that sentiment number this time around, you think? I mean, it's a final print, right? So I guess we kind of know which way the number's leaning.
Yeah, it is a final print. It's interesting to see it because it's at a low at the moment. But it's good to take that number in conjunction with things like consumer spending. Just to see, yeah, people don't feel very good about this, and yet we are all still out there spending away. So sometimes there might be a disconnect between what you're, you know, do what I say, not what I do. So it's an interesting number just to take in comparison to what we see with the actual results of spending overall and inflation.
Right. So looking forward to that number. That pretty much rounds out the week, right?
Yeah, the other item to definitely be watching out for this week is, of course, Thursday night. America is still in the World Cup playing Turkey. This one is, we've already qualified for the knockout stages, so doesn't matter too much if we win or lose it, but it's exciting to see America doing well in soccer for the first time, and probably, Alex, you're in my life, and probably Jim's life as well. It's probably never happened, so it's nice to see us doing well.
Yeah, no, this World Cup has felt a little bit different here in the States, I feel like. I feel like people are really getting into it. I know I have. I've been watching a lot of the group stage games and having a lot of good fun with it. And, you know, soccer game goes by pretty quick, so you can get on with your day too afterwards, even if it ends in a nil-nil tie, which I know is a common critique of the sport.
Yeah, it's been much more captivating than I normally would have found it. And it's fun to see all these different countries coming in. See the Scots over in Boston. That seems like a riot, drinking them out of beer. But I'm seeing all over, you know, Brazil and Philadelphia. It's been great to see the cultural exchange of that.
Agreed. If you're plugged into online short video format, I'm sure you've seen some of the, as you said, James, cultural exchange that's been going on. It makes me proud to be an American. It's pretty cool to see the people discovering Waffle House, for example, or or our big box retail stores, and how cheap you can get a t-shirt for.
All right. Last thing, gentlemen, before we wrap up, just wanted to, I think it would be nice to, I don't know, recount the life and the career of Alan Greenspan. So as we said earlier, and as many of you know by now, Alan Greenspan passed away at the age of 100. So very long life by today's standards, obviously. And he was, I mean, he was on TV till almost till the end. He had some things to say about the White House's attacks on the Fed, for instance. And there were some other things that he would opine on from time to time, but he was, I mean, he was an older guy, so lived a real long life. I went back and reminded myself of just his career just at the Fed, right? I mean, he was a economic consultant for many years, did a lot of work with Washington, and then, you know, kind of ingratiated himself in that landscape. And then he took the reins of the Fed like a couple months before Black Monday, which is crazy. That was a rough, you know, still the biggest one-day drop in the stock market ever in this country. It was a, you know, it was a mess to clean up, but he kind of implemented all the tools that the Fed had at their disposal at that time, which was basically cutting rates. But he got, you know, kind of instilled some confidence in the markets, as the Fed has done since then, with insisting on being, you know, a warehouse for liquidity and that sort of thing. And they got through that. He was part of the Fed during the dot-com bubble and then the aftermath of that. And that's kind of where I think he gets kind of a bad rap, or he got dinged a little bit, right? Was his policy, or the Fed's policy decisions that eventually helped lead up to the great financial crisis, where it seemed that maybe his and the Fed at the time's philosophy of very low regulation, very high liquidity, very low rates kind of caught up with us with what happened with the mortgage crisis that eventually, you know, almost took the whole system down in 2007 and 2008. But that's when Bernanke had taken over for him after a 30-some year career. Anyway, I'd forgotten that he started right before the major, like the big crash of, was that 87?
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. Tail end of Reagan's administration. You know, like you said, largest one day drop, I think, ever in the history of the U.S. stock market. Yeah. Then he steered that ship clear through for close to two decades, until I think about 2006 or so was when he finally retired, like you said, right in the run up to the global financial crisis. But yeah, he presided over a pretty robust U.S. economy during those years, tail end of Reagan into the 90s and early 2000s. I will note it's as you said, he preceded Bernanke, who kind of brought about the new school, the modern face of the Fed and its very public interactions. Greenspan was more so in the war school of thought of, letting the markets figure it out for themselves. He didn't, he has some quotes very much in the same vein as Warsh in regards to, I don't want people thinking about what the Fed is thinking, trying to obfuscate kind of what he means to say, and letting the market shake itself out. But yeah, no, he was a diligent public servant. And like I said, close to 20 years of service at the Fed, in addition to, you know, a lifetime in the world of economics.
Yeah, definitely a giant, I think, is what his widow said of him, just kind of a giant in the world landscape. And again, lived a long life and, you know, something to celebrate, but it was just an interesting time to go out, as James was saying earlier, you know, right at the changeover from one Fed to the next, and coincidentally, a Fed that's probably going to take on a similar philosophy as his Fed 20 plus years ago. So anyway, everybody, take a minute to, I don't know, read an article about him. Just remember a guy that spent a lot of time in that chair, and yeah, a lot of different things happened during, you know, a lot of boom, very little bust, and then... Yeah, I think he was even part of the backroom discussions that directly came after the financial crisis began, like the discussions about the bailouts of the banks and the liquidity facilities and the TARP and all that. I think it was Geithner and Bernanke and him and the guy from Lehman. Anyway, he was still kind of trying to be in that chair and trying to create some semblance of confidence during probably the roughest time in the economy in the last, you know, 30 plus years. All right. Anything else, gentlemen? Brilliant. All right. Thanks again for a good market update, fellas. We'll do it again next week.
Thanks, Jim.
And that's it for today. Join us next week for another episode of Optimal Insights, where we'll continue to provide you with the latest market analysis and insights to help you stay ahead. Check out our full videos on YouTube. You can also find each episode on all major podcast platforms. Thanks again for tuning into Optimal Insights.